Right.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I want to look at verse 3. Talk about when Adam had lived so many years, he gives birth to someone in his image. And he calls him Seth. That kind of reminds me, obviously, in his image, reminds you of God making Adam in his image. And so, in one sense, it kind of makes you think of we are like part of God's plan of creating and making. And you could do a whole Bible study on that and what that means for us, especially application-wise.
But does it mean that? Because Adam by this time had fallen, and he now has Seth in his own image.
Right, right. So you're saying, is it a bad thing?
No, I'm not saying good or bad. I'm saying, I think the thought that we're all made in the image of God has to be understood in some way. We all have the propensity for the sin within us, because we're actually made in the image of Adam, not in the image of God himself. Because
right.
The Son is in the Father's image in this case.
Right. Well, again, it's a whole Bible study.
I know.
Because we could debate this, talk about this, argue about it. It's something to think about, but it definitely alludes back to Genesis chapter 1, right?
Right.
In his image. The other thing it reminds me of is Genesis chapter 2. Vayikra et shmo Shet. And he called him Seth. And what was the job Adam was given by God in chapter 2? What was one of his jobs? Sorry?
To name everything.
Exactly. It's the same word there in Hebrew, kara. You know, he was to name all the animals, but this is the first time you see him naming another human being, right? The other names are not quite like that. And so, again, it's interesting. You could do another Bible study about naming, and it's a job that humanity has been given to do, and from God. Like I think of now, like there's this rhinoceros, and I think it's in Kenya, and it's basically going extinct in our lifetimes. There's 4 or 5 females left, and there's one male, and they've all been poached. And this male that's left is like 70 years old. They flew him in from Czechoslovakia, and No, he didn't get shot. He's just...
he's a very active rhino.
No, he's not, actually. Oh. He's, what do you call it when you get old?
Infertile?
Not just infertile, but senile. He's senile. And he's not able to continue the line.
Perform his duties.
Yeah. And not that it was his duty to begin with. I mean, he was in a zoo in Czechoslovakia, minding his own business.
Have you got a name?
Yeah, he's got a name. I don't know the whole story, but it makes me sad, you know, because, you know, in a sense, we were given that job to be in charge of the whole earth. A rhino.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Seen up, infertile, impotent.
Yeah.
Right. Past Bible study this week. I'm glad we're not online.
Well, actually, we are now. So, just that whole idea of naming something and being in charge of something, essentially to me is like it's a responsibility. I think that's what it comes across to me. And are we being faithful to what God's called us to do with His creation? With each other, with our children. And maybe we don't have children, but there are children in our lives that are like children that we are responsible for their well-being there, to grow up in a community, you know. So, anyway, that's another Bible study, but I don't want to talk about that this morning.
It's interesting that Jews are so, I mean, for them, the naming of a child at the bridge is very, very important.
Right, like God's father and godmother type of thing.
Well, you have a tzaddik as well.
Yeah.
The godmother. I mean, you don't know the child's name until it's eight days old. Well, you did it with your child.
Yeah, right.
But it's It's really a very, very, and everything rotates round the day of your Brit.
Right.
You know, you have your Bar Mitzvah on the same Shabbat as your Brit, and so on and so on. Everything is settled on the day you got your name. And it's very sad, there's some children who get really very bad names. I always think of his name Nimrod.
And
because actually Nimrod in Hebrew really, really means we will rebel. Wow. Meredith. And all the little boys I know call Nimrod, really nasty little boys.
My name is Nimrod.
Yeah.
Who's called Nimrod?
Yeah, yeah. So like,
his name
is.
Yeah. Okay, but we'll do that another time about the wickedness of Nimrod. But I want to look at this genealogy we just read. We start with Adam, and then who do we have next?
Seth.
Seth.
Enosh.
And
so they skip Cain and Abel.
Well, no.
Where
just hold on a second. Seth, Enosh.
Kenan.
Mahalalel. What is that? There's an L in here. I think there's an L there. Okay. Okay, who else?
Jared.
Come on, people. Is anybody reading this?
Jared. That's it.
No? Okay, you're right.
That's the verse we got.
And then the next verse
is Methuselah.
It's Enoch, right?
Then we have Enoch, who becomes the father of Methuselah.
Okay. And then, right, we'll just finish out the genealogy of giving him Methuselah.
And he becomes the father of Lamech.
And then, this is where it's all going, just to him. And, we're going to write their names here in Hebrew. Shed, Enosh, Kenan, Mach. Is there an Aleph there?
No.
Is there an Aleph here?
No.
There is.
Sounds like a name Brian
Shoshi
would come up with.
Yeah, actually, it does sound exactly like the name. It just changes the letters.
There's two lamed, not a. That first aleph is a lamed.
Okay, like that?
Put a lamed there instead.
There's three lamed.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, Hanoch. Methuselah. Lamed. Wait a second, it's a kaf, right? Kaf and Noach. Okay, now I was just noticing that.
You want to put Lemet? If you put Yelet?
Yeah, sorry, Lemet. Okay, Lemet, it's really how you say it.
It's a Pavel form, it's Lemet.
Right. But in the English, they translate it with an A. That's interesting.
Probably following
from. Now, I just noticed this, and this, again, is going to be just kind of like, I don't know what you want to do with it, but it's something to think about when you do your Bible study. I want to talk about another. Sharon brought up the point of Adam had three sons, right?
Mm-hmm.
One is Seth.
First boy is Cain.
Yeah, Cain is here. Cain and Abel. And we all know what happened to Abel. But Cain lived, right? Cain. And if you go to chapter 4, which is last week, what's his genealogy? Go to Genesis chapter 4.
Cain ends up having Cain's descendant of Lamech.
Right. Okay, so his first son is Enoch, which is the same thing in Hebrew, Hanoch, as, where is he at? Right here. And then Hanoch, in chapter 4, verse 18, who does he have? Yeah, in the English it says Irad, which is basically what it says in Hebrew. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Irad has
Mahuya.
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 Oh, it's got a Nef, right?
Mechuya'ev.
Mechuya'ev. And
Metusha'ev.
Metusha'ev. Yeah, let me just get Mechuya'ev. This is, it's a Mem, Het, is that an Ein in there?
No, there's a Vav.
Okay, and then he has who?
Metusha'ev.
Where's Mechuya'ev?
Metusha'ev. Okay, and then he has who?
Lamech.
Lamech, which again is really Lamech. Okay, and then after him? Lamech has three sons, right? They are?
Jabal.
Jabal, which is Yaval in Hebrew.
Jubal.
Jubal, which is Yuval. You're going to friendly and Yuval again? It's pretty popular. And Tubal Cain. Which is something like this. Tubal Cain. Kuf.
Kuf Yud.
Could
you get
enough
of that
root? Yeah. Kuf Yud. Okay. So I just wanted to point this out. Adam is number one. So his sons are number two in the lineage. And you've got three, four, five, six, seven. And everyone knows that Enoch is number seven. That's very famous and well known. And also everyone knows that Noah is number 10. Again, another significant number when you play around with numerology, and people love to do Bible codes and all this stuff with seven and tens.
Because they're known for being complete and holy.
Right, seven is related to Shabbat, creation, complete, holy, striper for my generation.
Seven is also complete, but technology of testing as well.
Yeah, more of like tribulation and trials. You've got the 10 plagues, you've got Daniel's 10 days with the festivals and the water, and it goes on and on. Job had 10 children, they're killed.
Abraham had 10 trials.
Abraham had 10 trials. That's not in the Bible, but it's in Jewish tradition. So what I want to point out here is, this is number 3, he's number 4, number 5, number 6, and number 7. And Lemeth here is, what do we know about him? Kind Lemeth.
Is this 777 years?
No, this Lemeth
is
777 years.
He has to be a man.
That's years to be
a man.
77
times.
Sorry?
He Cain is a man 7 times.
Right, if you look at Genesis 4, verse 23. Or 24. If Cain is to be avenged 7 times as much, then Lemeth 77 times, or 7 times 7.
And also, what I realized when I read it yesterday was that he lived 777 years.
Well, again, it's a different one. This guy, this Lemeth.
Oh, I beg his pardon.
This is Noah's father. Here's what I want. Yeah. This is the new thing I want to point out here. Is check this out. His son is Hanoch. We got a Hanoch here. Irad, what's that sound like?
Yered,
right? Look at the root here in the Hebrew. Well, not the root, but you got Yud Resh Dalet for Jedid. So in English, you don't see it, but in Hebrew, Mechuya'ev. Again, who does that sound like?
Mahalalel.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. There's something interesting there. Metusha'ev.
Metushalah.
And then you got Lemeth, which you pointed out. And it's interesting. And then the son here. It seems like the big son here is Tubal Cain, but this is the eighth generation here. And notice he's got three sons, and we all know Noah's got three sons, right?
Shem.
Ham, Shem, and Japheth.
And what's in
and all their sons are going to be the father of
the fathers of all nations.
No, Noah's son Shem. Was that because you ran out of ideas for a name? Doesn't Shem just mean a name?
Well, I mean, you know, we don't know. I mean, because like our names, they gain meaning over.
What about Ham? Who's your father?
Yeah, he's just hot.
So are you saying that they copied the names?
Okay, wait, sorry, one second. And then Canaan. This is like, to me, it's like Cain. It's the same type of
root.
And is there anything else? And also, Enosh. What is Enosh come from, or what's it related to?
Man.
Adam, right? Man. Isn't it like Anashim, when we say Anashim in Hebrew?
Right.
So, it's interesting that you've got this idea similar, kind of like Peter, his name in Aramaic was Kepha, right, which is like rock, and you've got Petros, which is also kind of a rocky type of name, so... Okay, yeah, so I'm not trying to say they copied each other. Well, who knows? Maybe they did. Maybe they live on Earth at the same time, so maybe they weren't creative with names. But that you really, if you look at the Bible here, you have two competing lineages descending from Adam. And, you know, one is good and one is bad. And we all know what comes next is the flood, and that's how our section ends here. We're going to talk about the flood here in a second. Like, why did it come? And when the flood comes, who on here is alive?
No one.
Okay, who dies the year the flood comes?
Methuselah.
Yeah.
No,
Methuselah. He dies. He's the last one to die. He died the year of the flood. His son died before him. Because he lived at 777. And Methuselah lived at 969.
Yeah.
So he outlives his son by quite a bit. And we'll talk about... So we'll talk about Methuselah when we get to Enoch, because that will be related to the flood. But over here, who's alive? Like, what does chapter 4 say about them and how long they live?
Less time.
It doesn't get there.
No
years for Cain's line. Here you have the years, and here you don't. So you really don't know how long they live over here. And that's interesting because we're going to talk about what that could be.
In the movie Tuvan Kain alive.
Right, the movie that came out on Noah a couple years ago. That's in a whole other Bible study.
what's the significance between chapter 4 and 5? Right after it gives that whole line of Cain, then it says, Adam lived with his wife at Seth and Seth to him, Enosh.
Right.
And then in chapter 5, it starts all over with this direct account of Adam.
Right. I mean, it's the two genealogies. I'm just pointing out similarities, differences, and I'll let you take it home and think about it. It's a lot of stuff to chew on, but I find it very fascinating, especially when you look at the Hebrew, because you see that it's stronger, the comparisons.
Right. Isn't there something, if you take the first letter of every name of Seth, it means something?
Of these guys here?
Yeah.
Well, all the names mean something, and I don't want to play on their names. I mean, I know people do that, and you can do that, and that's kind of like art, where you can paint stuff.
But if you go down to the letter, then it's too far.
Yeah,
you can say anything.
Right. If you pull out a microscope and you look at the very atoms of, say, a bird, you actually don't see the bird. You're looking at something beyond the bird.
So what strikes me is that basically we've got goodies and baddies. And the baddies, the canine, gets destroyed by the flood. And it more or less ends with Lemma. And the, one of the things that struck me in the recent weeks is this whole understanding which Lois had about when Jesus talks about forgiving 70 times 7, it goes back to Lemma, who committed violence 70 times 7.
No, so he wanted vengeance.
Vengeance.
Well, depends how you interpret it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but her understanding was that his vengeance was basically over the top. It was 70 times 7, far more than Cain, his father or his grandfather or whatever. And Jesus says, your forgiveness has to be exactly the same. And that's where Jesus gets the 70 times 7 from. It was a real aha moment for me, because when you begin to understand the life of Yeshua or the New Testament in the light of Tanakh, it comes to life in a completely new way. So your forgiveness has to be as extravagant as his vengeance was.
Let's take that rabbit path and go down it, down that rabbit hole. In this culture, in the Middle East, which is the biblical, goes into the biblical culture, when someone from your clan kills someone else from another tribe, what happens?
You can kill anyone from the rival clan.
You can kill anyone from the tribe, not even the person who did it, just a 12-year-old boy who's standing on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And so... It happens in Abu Ghosh. It happens in the streets of Jerusalem right now.
But I guess when you said Jesus referred to 70 times 7, he was referring to Daniel's prophecy, the 70 weeks. 70 times 7.
I think he was.
It has nothing to do with.
But wait, let's hold on to the 7 stuff. I want to talk about the vengeance.
Yeah.
So, Sheila brought up, so is that one for one? I'm like, yes, according to the Bible, right? We all know eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Because, well, the thing is it's actually a good law, because if I lose an eye, then the guy can't come and take out two of my eyes. Just one of my eyes.
He can't kill you.
He can't kill you for taking out one of his eyes. Right. Because then it escalates the situation. It keeps it within...
proportional.
Makes it proportional. Now, going back to Canaan chapter 4 in verse 15, if you want to look there. Everybody brought it through this whole 7 times. If someone kills Cain, then 7 people are going to die from Cain. Does this sound right? According to the biblical law, according to just common sense?
No.
And on top of that, Cain killed his brother. Why is he getting protected? Like, you would think he would be killed because his brother was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And the ancient interpreters also had issues with that. And there's all kinds of examples of asking these questions, what's going on here? And so the way some of them were interpreting this is that Cain was actually going to get a punishment 7 times worse. They read it, the way they read it was different than if you read it kind of in the basic understanding.
They read it as ultimate judgment for that previous sin?
Right, like the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Old Testament, says, because sevenfold has it been avenged from Cain. Josephus was a Jewish commentator writing about how the Bible was interpreted in the time of Jesus. God made Cain a curse and threatened to punish his posterity into the seventh generation. So what happens is not only are they saying 7 times, is it going to be 7 times worse on Cain, they're saying those 7 times are 7 generations.
Well, that makes sense. And then Lamech is the 7th generation.
Okay.
No, but according to Cain's life, is he not 7th from Cain?
Yes, he is.
Not from Cain, from Adam.
No, it doesn't matter. I mean...
It doesn't matter?
Well, you know, it's the Bible. I mean, it's...
That's actually better.
No, what I'm saying is...
Yavan, Yuval,
Yuval,
kind of children that
are
wiped away in the flood.
Okay, maybe. But there's this interpretation.
He wants to say something about Cain, Sharon.
That's Lemus. What does Lemus say? What does he say in verse...
What does he say in verse, what is it, 16? No, in 24. Sorry, in 23. Genesis 4, verse 23. Lemech said to his wives, Ada and Zilla, listen to me, you wives of Lemech. Hear my words. I have killed a man for wounding me. And a young man for hurting me. And so there were these interpretations that who is the man that he killed? It was Cain. Let me just read a couple of those. No, you could say a man, and he killed a young man. I mean, I know in poetry you do parallelism, but so that Cain ends up living up until this time period, because again, people are living 700, 800, 900 years. You can apply the same principle on this side. So this is interpretation that Lemech ends up killing Cain or Cain, and there are different reasons why it happens, but that basically he, seven generations gets him. He's punished for what he ultimately...
What's your biggest reason?
Well, one is Lemech was a hunter of giants, and the mark of Cain was he had horns. You know, the I'll put a sign on you, you're this mark. And so he mistaked him for an animal.
I remember the Bible study, I think it was what John Belts did, but somebody, one of you might have done it, I don't remember, talking about the reasons for learning Akkadian and things. And what was the name of the tribe and the papers of that time, that begins with H. And one of the things that he showed was that the ancient culture had a much, much tougher penalty for everything. You know, you can kill whatever, you can do this and this. And what the Bible is doing all the way through, and particularly so in the Tanakh, and even more so when you come to the New Testament, was it showing
mercy,
a more merciful way, instead of doing it. Yeah. So instead of going out and killing him,
starting
he gets a mark on him to say you're to be protected and other people shouldn't be killing him. And so on. I mean, that's the way I've understood it. It goes on all the time. You do not have vengeance is mine, says the Lord. The Lord will deal with it.
Right.
And you've got to find, you know, you lose one eye, and that's it. You can take out the other guy's eye if you want to, but you don't kill him.
Right.
Whereas in the old days, in the old rule, what was it called, Danny? The
Hammurabi.
Hammurabi, that's
the name
right.
of the king.
That's right, King Hammurabi.
But his code is the one.
His code was sort of, you know, he takes out your eye, you can deal with him and all his kids. So
right.
It's like here we're getting a sort of more merciful way of understanding the ancient codes because our God is different.
Right, So another thing with Cain is that the flood comes because of Cain's sin. In Wisdom of Solomon, which is in the Septuagint, says in chapter 10, when an unrighteous man departed from wisdom in his anger, he perished because in rage he slew his brother. When the earth was flooded because of him, wisdom again saved it, steering the righteous man on a piece of wood. So,
here you have my seventh generation from Cain. It's paid back in seven generations.
Right, they're interpreting that Cain lived all the way until the flood and then was killed in the flood with all the wickedness.
Yeah. And also, when we read the flood next week, all the mention of why it comes is bloodshed.
Right. That's
and violence.
Jubilees, yeah.
That filled the earth. And so Cain is the father of bloodshed.
Right.
Especially in a sense.
So, now I want to come to an area to talk about, I know, Enoch. Because he's the seventh generation, you've got Lemech, and he's the seventh generation from Cain. And let's look at those few verses in chapter 5. Somebody want to read verses 21 to 24.
When Enoch had lived 65 years, he became the father of Methuselah. After he became the father of Methuselah, Enoch walked faithfully with God 300 years and had other sons and daughters. Altogether, Enoch lived a total of 365 years. Enoch walked faithfully with God, then he was no more because God took him away.
Okay. So what do we understand about Enoch? What do we know from our Bible studies or things we've learned over the years?
That he didn't die.
That he didn't die. Does it say that there in the Bible?
Taken away.
Okay, the words lakas.
Some say it's raptured.
Okay, some people will say it's like rapture. Lakas in the Bible can also mean to basically be killed, like in war when they take you away, your enemies. So there have been interpretations, you know, that he died or that he wasn't taken away. But like if you look at a lot of your translations, like in the Septuagint, it is this idea that he's translated, that he's taken away. Also, it makes you think of Elijah, right? He's always compared to Elijah. And 2 Kings, if you go to 2 Kings chapter 2.
Verse 11.
Yeah, let's read verse 10. You want to read it then? 10 and 11.
You have asked me a hard thing. Nevertheless, if you see me when I am taken from you, it shall be so for you. But if not, it shall not be so. Then it happened as they continued on and talked that suddenly a chariot of fire appeared with horses of fire and separated the two of them, and Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven.
Okay. So here we have that word, lakah. Here it's the puah lukah. That's in verse 10. Because he says, if you see me when I'm taken, then you'll get whatever you ask for. So predominantly your translations have been that Elijah didn't die, which is what most of us have grown up understanding it as. So he's taken. So the question becomes, why? Why is he taken to heaven, presumably? And we need to look at verse 22 to find that out. Genesis 5, verse 22. Back to Genesis 5.
The person in that line is there's a conflict with the Lord.
Does he walk faithfully with God? Oh, no, that's...
Okay, because he walked with the Lord. So that's one thing. And the question is, when did he walk with the Lord?
After the human father.
Right. So a lot of times we don't notice that. Acharei holido et metusha'ela. And so this you get in the Septuagint in Ben Sirah. It says, let me just get my computer to come back on here.
Is there any significance that he has the shortest life of these 10 and his son has the longest?
Not that I was reading recently. I'm sure there's got to be stuff out there.
If you take them, you better be taken without dying. If I can't live out a full life today, he would have taken it in his prime, kind of thing.
Yeah, but they always say, you know, the good die young, right? So there's also that interpretation.
My translation says, for God took him away. Does that make this his New American Standard?
I've got God took him away as well, NIV.
Does that still work out as... like a war, being taken in war?
You know, it says God took him away.
The question is, what does that mean?
But God can kill people too.
Yeah.
But so
it could still be war, in a war situation? Or
right. I mean,
or he just struck him dead.
It's a good question. We have to, like, take the words and go through and look them up when God takes things and see what.
Can you give us the word again in Hebrew to take away?
You see that God takes.
Lekach.
He takes Adam and puts him in the garden.
Yes.
From the dust. Yeah, puts him in the garden. And then later he takes Eve and brings him to Adam.
Right.
So it seems like it's taking and then. Because
from
Nina
she is taken.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, good point.
But we call him Zohar Etni Asaman.
And I agree, and your ancient interpreters also agree. They also think that he was not killed, but he was taken, right? So I think that's the best way to look at it. But it's good to like look at those little bumps in the text and research them, look them out.
What about this business that he becomes faithful only after becoming a dad? That's
yes. So this is powerful. He's 65 years old. He gives birth to Metushalach. And in Ben Sirah 44, verse 16, that's in the Septuagint, again, the Greek translation of the Old Testament, it says, Enoch pleased the Lord and was taken up, being an example of repentance to all generations. And so what is this tradition here looking at? It's saying that here is Enoch does not start to walk with God until he's 65. So that means he repents at 65. They're reading that based off of that text that he walked with God after. It didn't say he walked with God his whole life. It said after his son is born. In Genesis 5?
Right. Mm. I'm just interested that you've got to become a dad before you repent and start really walking with the Lord.
Well,
kids will do that to you.
What?
Kids will do that to you.
The third generation, Enosh, is when people start calling on the name of the Lord. That's what it says.
Is Enosh not Shep?
I think it's Enosh. Read it. You have the text in front of you.
I thought it was Shep.
I think it's Enosh. They start calling on the name of the Lord.
Yes.
Enosh. And so then.
Okay, you're right.
Typically, calling on the name of the Lord can be equated to sacrificing to Him. Like Abraham called on the name of the Lord, and he built altars all around the land. So then there's a progression to Hanok. You know, if you follow that line of interpretation, where he, the father, was repentant.
And what's also interesting about Methuselah is his name is, if you were to break it down, we can do a little Bible code here. Okay, my name is Meth, right? Dead, or he died, and Shala,